Welcome to Modcast, a Civilization podcast focused on game modding. Rob, R8XFT.
Vice Virtuoso.
Narad.
VS.
Welcome to Modcast 74 with me, Rob, R8XFT. Joining me today are...
Lee S.
Narad the Forgiven.
The Crazy Scotsman.
Right, and welcome to us, Crazy Scotsman.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me on.
Has anyone had a chance to play or at least look at Khmer or Indonesia?
Yes. I've played using them. I actually like playing as Nubia. So I've played as Nubia versus the two of them, and they're actually pretty good. I think that as well, from a modding perspective, the Khmer have a district that causes a culture bomb. So it seems like the culture bomb idea seems to be coming over and over again, doesn't it, at the moment, with different things being able to cause it. But that, again, is, I'm sure, will be replicated in mods with other districts that cause a culture bomb in no time.
Yeah, I'm not a huge, huge fan of that, although what I will say is that if that continued as a trend, sets a precedence or a theory of, like, cultural or productive way of conquering, which I think is very interesting.
Yeah. The fact that the aqueducts there make such an effect on other things as well, that's quite nice, and that could be replicated in the way it just opens a couple of extra doors.
They're both two solid civs. It helps maybe push away the supposed Eurocentricism of Civ 6. It's a step in the right direction. It's about time, I should say, that there are ballistas on the backs of elephants. The other thing that I'm still looking forward to is catapults that shoot horses. Phyraxis, Mongols, catapults that shoot horses.
Crazy Scotsman, you've done some city states, you've done Baldwin as well, which is the Kingdom of Jerusalem. Which did you prefer doing? Do you prefer doing a civ or the city states, or were they equally as good?
Well, they're kind of different experiences, to be honest. I really enjoy the city-states because I'm actually able to do everything required for them, while when it comes to the civilizations, I don't have all the skills. Jerusalem was really a group effort. There were a lot of ridiculously talented modders who helped me with that, and I was really grateful for their help. I wouldn't have been able to complete it without them. It was a different experience for each one. I really enjoyed the kind of collaborative aspect for Jerusalem, but the city-state, I'm just kind of able to do those whenever I want, which is nice.
So that implies that you have programming chops. You build the icons yourself as well, so that would imply that you can at least do some more art than I can.
I can play around in Illustrator, and I can do some programming, but any sort of leader art is just not possible for me to do.
Was it Chimpanzee that made the Baldwin?
Yes, Chimpanzee made Baldwin, and I was just ecstatic with how it turned out. I think he did just a fantastic job.
Yeah, as someone who can't do art myself, I find that it's always really nice when you put a mod together and you've been testing it with placeholder art for ages and you wonder how good the mod's going to be, and then you get your art and you drop it in and suddenly everything is just so much perfect.
Yeah, definitely. And I also want to just mention Deliverator as well. He did some amazing Crusader unit models for the mod as well, which is definitely something outside of my skill set. And I think he just outdid himself with those Crusader models. They look amazing.
Yeah, I remember I did some LUA for you. Narai calls it Lua, but I can't even remember what it was.
I call it Lua, too.
That does segue into my question, though, which was going to be, how much of this is modifier SQL scripting? How much of this is Lua?
The Lua that Lee did for me, which, again, thank you very much, Lee. It really helped fix some problems that I had. The Lua is actually a relatively minor part of the mod. Most of it is through the modifiers. The chapter commander unique building replaces the barracks and the stables. The game does not have a way through modifiers to have one building replace two different buildings. And so in order to make a workaround for that so that the stable wouldn't show up for the Jerusalem player, I had to basically create a dummy building which had to be added in via Lua, and then a second dummy building for everyone else so that that first dummy building didn't show up for everyone else. We made it work. It was fairly complicated, and I couldn't do it.
So you've got a bunch of different city-state packs. How do you decide which area you're going to city-state out?
My first city-state pack, and I'm going to butcher all of the pronunciations here because that's not actually something I know. The Pew city-states were some that I have been interested in actually for quite some time. That was the first one I decided to do just because it's a, you know, kind of an ancient civilization that's not as well known to most people, and that's kind of my wheelhouse. That's what I really enjoy working with is ancient civilizations. And so that was one I had actually done a mod for in Civ 2 a while back, which had some Pew civilization. And so that just kind of felt like a natural thing for me to do. After that, it's basically just what areas in the ancient world do I think could use some more representation? Which ones just interest me?
Right. I see you've got Pew, you've got Canaanites, you've got Sri Lanka. You started a South American city-states with a pre-Columbian Pack 1. At least implies that there will be more later.
Yes, I am actually planning a North American pre-Columbian Pack. And then after that, I am planning on doing a Celtic city-states pack with kind of representing a bunch of different Celtic cities around Europe instead of focusing on one particular area.
So this almost becomes a question for Rob. Rob, are you like me in that when you hear somebody else is modding in your kind of like wheelhouse, if you will, or you're on your rightful clay, that you start becoming almost unhealthily interested in seeing what's to come? Because as soon as you said North American city-states, I went, wait, what? What? I need to see these.
Yes, I am very interested in the Celtic city-states, and you're right, it does sort of make my prick ears up when somebody does something Anno Domini-related or could go in there. Certainly the Canaanite city-states that you did definitely straight in.
To be honest, I'm pretty thrilled, actually, that you would include them in Anno Domini, so I'm pretty excited about really any ancient cultures, so if people were interested in some sort of collaboration on certain ancient city-states, I'd be more than happy to work on those as well.
Indigenous peoples is my stick, right? I think it's too early to ask, but maybe not too early to ask, what's your short list for North American city-states?
I've got a few that are definite, and then a couple others that I'm thinking about for North America. Definite ones are Oraibi.
I tricked you.
Right? It's one of an old Pueblo city-state.
Okay.
And then there's YM, which is a Pacific Northwest city-state. It was a fairly important fishing trading ground for quite some time, so that one interested me. And then I really wanted to do one that was kind of like an Inuit city-state, but there's obviously not a whole lot of options.
Yeah, have fun with that.
So I found a site that's called Tunariat, which is basically right on the northern edge of the Hudson Bay. And
right.
I'm going to go ahead and I think I'm going to do that one with some cool tundra slash snow related suzerain bonus.
Right.
But I'm also looking at Chetro Kettle.
Okay.
I think it's an old Mississippian. It's not one of the, it's not the main one, but it's
it sounds familiar.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's some other options which I may look at later, like Taos and Etsanoa.
Those actually sound more familiar than. It is difficult to keep them all straight simply because, for the most part, I don't know what the languages mean.
Right, and I have absolutely no idea how I pronounce any of these, so yeah, sorry yeah. to all the indigenous people who I just butchered their language. But yeah, I feel like the most interesting city-states tend to be ones which there's something unique about them. There's some kind of unique ability that really meshes well. For instance, in the Sri Lanka city-states, what actually initiated my curiosity in looking at that project was I stumbled upon Damascus steel. The steel right. that was used for Damascus steel didn't actually originate in Damascus in Syria. That steel was imported from India and Sri Lanka, and so I wanted to add that as a resource in, which led to the Sri Lankan city-states.
And that's where you have the Sarik iron resource, I think?
Right, yeah.
From, I'm not even going to try to pronounce that.
I'm going to butcher it, but I'll give it a shot. Tissa Maharama?
Yeah, you might be right. My brain is saying Tissa Maharama, which is entirely more musical sounding, but probably totally incorrect.
Or we're just both totally wrong. You know, that's the possibility, too.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think this is a good time to also start talking about how do you approach coming up with suzerain bonuses? Really, when I look at mods right now in this early state of Civilization VI, working with a lot of hard-coded modifiers and a lot of the design space hasn't mapped out very well, when I click on a city-state mod, whether it's PAC, whether it's yours or TC's or some of the other ones, that's really confusing. Your acronym is very close to
yes.
I'm actually expecting to just see somebody's put a coat of paint on an existing city-state. And yet, when I look at your mods, your city-states, you've actually got quite a lot of highly varied, not just clones of existing mods. So how do you come up with your different bonuses?
Well, when I'm thinking about the city-state bonuses, in my mind, if it doesn't do something that's different from the vanilla city-states, I don't really see a point in adding it. You know, I think there is something to be said for name variety or art variety, but I don't know that there's a real big point in that for the city-states, perhaps, because what might end up happening is you end up, because they're randomly selected, having three or four city-states with essentially the same bonus. So basically what I try to do is I try to look at all the bonuses that are out there and just find holes and look at the different modifiers that are available and see, you know, if I can come up with something really unique. And occasionally that's led to something pretty cool, and other times I tried one, which did not work at all, which was to add, to be the suzerain of the city-state, that it added an additional belief to your religion.
Right.
That did not work.
Oh, yeah.
That would have been fun.
That would have been...
lost it every time.
Right. But what ended up happening is it just added it again and again every time you became the suzerain, and it didn't remove it, so it just built and built and built, which was problematic.
Oh, so you could have like 47 extra beliefs if you kept losing the suzerain status.
Yeah, so
basically, and then regaining it, yeah.
Yeah, my bonus was to add, I don't actually remember what I specifically, but it was something like gold for followers, and it just ended up with like, you got hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of gold from your religion. It just did not work.
That's interesting, too, because what would be the difference between having this as a bonus belief and then losing it if you weren't the suzerain versus just having it give you a straight bonus to followers? Or are you only able to do that religious bonus through the belief system?
The answer to that depends on how the religious beliefs work. Some of the modifiers really only work with religious beliefs. I haven't done adequate testing to figure out which ones, but some of the effects are tied to a religion, and at least the particular one that I tried only worked when it was implemented as a belief.
You have to not only work with the tag, if you will, but you also have to work with the thing that the modifier is tagged to.
Right, often. Yeah, exactly.
I don't see any way around the limitations there.
You had mentioned earlier that this is not your first rodeo in civilization modding. You mentioned that you created a Civilizations for Civilization 2.
Yes.
What's your history of Civilization modding, or modding in general?
Well, actually, I first started modding in Civ 5, not Civ 2, which is counterintuitive. But I started with adding building packs, basically just creating a whole bunch of new buildings in Civ 5, and along with some various other kind of miscellaneous mods. I found that in longer games, when you slow down the tech tree progression, I always run out of everything, of things to build.
Right.
And so I just decided I wanted to add more buildings so that I had things to build so that I wasn't bored. And that's kind of pretty much the main story for me with Civ 5. And from that, it evolved to, you know, some kind of more gameplay modifications. And I released an omnibus mod, which combined my mods with some that I found to be really, really good from other modders. But when I came into the Civ 5 modding scene, it was already pretty mature. So, you know, there wasn't like a great many gaps for me to fill. And then after that, I got back into Civ 2 because, in my opinion, Civ 2 is still the best of all the Civs. So I played that for a while and made an ancient world mod for that, which included city-states, the Pew city-states as a civilization, changed all the civilizations there, added in some new units, and changed the tech tree around. That was just a personal project because ancient world is best.
What can you tell us about the Jerusalem mod?
Well, I'd never tried doing a Civ before, and so the whole experience was quite new for me. It was a great experience because, I was saying previously, it kind of turned into this community mod, which was great. I was pretty ecstatic about that because it brought in a whole bunch of people who knew what they were doing. I wanted to do something, because I haven't done any Civs before, I kind of felt like if I was going to do one, I didn't want to step on anybody's toes, because basically I didn't have any marked territory, as it were. when it comes to civilizations.
I got the mental image of you walking up beside a crusader and raising one leg.
And, yep, marking him, that's mine.
Yeah.
I've always been fascinated with the Crusades. And so I thought, nobody's doing this, nobody's kind of doing something in this wheelhouse yet for Civ 6, so this could be something that I do. And if I mess it up, it's not one of the major Civs, so it's not a huge deal.
So one of the things that I noticed with Kingdom of Jerusalem that I really like is that they're kind of an interesting hybrid where your Deus Vault ability that causes cities to convert to your religion really makes you kind of like, I'm not going to build a huge, I don't know if you would anyway, but I'm not going to build a huge army of missionaries and cover the world because instead I'm going to spread religion by fighting. How does that actually end up working out for you?
You know, I wanted to have Jerusalem to be a faith and conquest kind of domination, like a split between that in terms of what their focus was. And I felt that when you capture a city and it converts to your religion, that creates a really interesting gameplay dynamic because, let's say, if you're going for a domination victory, you don't really particularly care about converting cities. But if you're going for a religious victory and you've got a massive army and you automatically convert cities when you capture them, all you need to do is capture enough cities from a civilization and then gift them back to that civilization, and they'll be your religion, and all of a sudden that civilization now follows your religion. And so I thought that that was kind of an interesting gameplay mechanic that you could use as a kind of an alternate way to the missionary apostle spam for the religious victory.
I do like the design. A really good idea to try and conquer through faith. I like the idea that the cities that you conquer actually become part of your religion. Take on your religion. I think that's great because you could almost get a religious victory without really concentrating too much on religion, if that makes sense. Nice design.
But it's also interesting because it creates kind of sometimes a catch-22 for Jerusalem, which is intentional. I think some people don't really like the fact that Jerusalem, it seems like you have to found a religion in order for Jerusalem to be playable. I don't think that's actually the case. But if you don't found a religion and somebody has converted you to their religion, you need to be really careful because you may end up winning the game for them.
Right. I hadn't thought of that. That's a very good point.
And despite what I think some people might think, that's also an intentional design decision that I felt fit very well with who and what the Kingdom of Jerusalem really was. Because, you know, historically, Kingdom of Jerusalem was beholden to the papacy. So, you know,
right.
it really did have allegiance to something else outside of it. And so I just thought it was an interesting mechanic which had multiple levels of impact throughout the game depending on what was going on. If they're in the game as an AI and you happen to convert them, then any domination sprees they go on will benefit you as basically
so
their pope.
That's just perfect, of course, because the Jerusalem city-state converts to your religion when you have a suzerain bonus. So it's kind of like, if you can convert the Kingdom of Jerusalem, you get that same benefit in spades.
Yeah. I think it turned out okay.
I really like how, with the addition of agendas and with the addition of a new design philosophy that seems to have come in with Civ 6, there is this kind of like idea of, even though it was really overstated when they were first announcing it, this idea of like working off of who's in your game to come with up with an optimal plan of victory, thought out of the box and said, you know, what is the pathway towards winning when Baldwin's around? I'm really excited to see if you're going to produce more civilizations in the future, what you'll come up with.
Well, thank you. I do have some ideas, but I'll probably be releasing more city-state packs before I release new civilizations. I'll leave it at that.
Kind of get that whilst doing a civilization can be quite complex, he's doing some complex things with those as well, and I think perhaps if wanting to practice on those, then that sort of is a good way of finding out how to do certain things with code, and then when you come on to doing the civilizations, it makes that a little bit easier, if that makes any sense at all.
That definitely makes sense. City-states are basically a mini-Civ, so
yeah.
they're definitely an easy way to kind of start figuring things out, and I think it's a great way for, you know, other modders, too. City-states are a great way to get your feet wet.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think from the point of having modded some of your city-states into Anno Domini that we were talking about before, I think certainly with the first pack of Canaanite Civs, there seemed to be kind of a long way round taken to achieve certain results. But I think you kind of getting there more and more. It still works. It's fine. It just seemed to take me all afternoon to get them in. But it was well worth doing. At the same time, you know, my choice to do it. And, you know, I really think that they're quite exceptional, really, even with the long way around that I mentioned. But I think as you get used to doing those, you'll find shortcuts as you go on. So hopefully that'll stand you in good stead when you do more and more sibs. And I hope you do more sibs, because I do think that Jerusalem was excellent. I really do.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that.
Now that I realize that Deem is filtering me to only Civilization 6 mods when I'm looking at your workshop, I can now see that, yes, you have a good 20-so mods in Civilization 5 packs, often buildings and starting worker things, and also some beyond
mods for that game we don't talk about.
Yes, right. And then now Civilization 6. So as is fairly common for me, I'm completely oblivious and had no idea. Despite being active in the Civilization 5 modding scene.
That's all right. I always considered myself to be a rather, how do you put it, low to mid-tier modder, maybe? So I'm hoping with Civ 6 that I'm just continuing to improve on that and releasing better quality stuff. But there's some mods from Civ 5 which I'm not particularly proud of. There's some, there's quite a few that I am, but others are, I feel like, pretty rudimentary efforts.
If you're modding a civilization such as Jerusalem, I have a feeling that that would not be something that maybe Firaxis would bring out in the expansion, but we never know. Let's say you've created this civilization and currently we're in a vanilla world, aren't we? And we'll say it's Jerusalem. You've decided a particular route for Jerusalem and it all looks great. Firaxis comes out with the same civ, possibly a different leader, but has a different direction. So do you then, at that point, change your mod so it ties in with Firaxis's civilization direction, or do you say, hey, screw them, I'm going to leave mine as it is and we'll have two different types of Jerusalem?
That's a good question. I do think I'm fortunate in that I sincerely doubt they're going to do a Kingdom of Jerusalem, so I won't have to actually do that.
But there may be modders out there that create something that does happen to get picked up. And I think where we are very different to Civ 5 is that it's the first civilization of Civ 6 where a whole bunch of modders has gone from the previous iteration straight onto it. We never really had that with Civ 4 or Civ 3 and Civ 5. All of a sudden, a lot of the Civ 5 community have come onto Civ 6 and started modding for it. So they're wanting to create civilizations before even Firaxis even brought out Poland. There were other civilizations starting to be created. So there is a chance that some of these that are being done will at some point be picked up by Firaxis, because presumably there'll be a couple of expansion packs.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I'd agree with you. I think that you're on pretty safe ground with Jerusalem, but there must be some of the other guys that are bringing out mods that are for civilizations that maybe will be picked up by Firaxis. And the question is, at that point, for those people, will they think, right, okay, well, what I'll do, I'll cancel my mod almost, and I'll go back, I'll keep the ability in for the leader, but I'll pick up the civilization ability and unit and building that Firaxis has got. Or do they say, right, okay, instead of doing that, I will have two forms of Jerusalem or whatever the sub is.
So if that were to happen to me, kind of my approach to thinking about that would take into account a couple of different factors. I think one of the first factors is that in either case, I would not like two different versions of the same civilization.
No, I'd agree.
That doesn't work. And so I would either go with just turning my civilization into an alternate leader, which I think Firaxis that's another kind of great move on Firaxis's part, is the alternate leaders, because they allow you to provide modders to add in a whole bunch of different flavors for the same civilization. And I think that would probably be the way that I would go. But if I didn't like the design that Firaxis did, what I would probably just do is make it kind of a hybrid, a civilization mod at that point. It would modify their particular civilization, kind of combining the elements of the two that I wanted. But I would definitely not keep both in there.
Cool.
How is modding Civilization 2? I would assume that it would be the most horrible nightmare.
There was not a whole lot you could do. Because basically, it's like a single text document, and then a couple of image files is pretty much all you had to work with.
Right, right. So, it'd be similar to when I was doing Total Annihilation modding back in the 90s. Civilization 5, I think, is the only game that I've modded so far, Civilization 6, where you can actually go beyond that and actually script things in that are new and different. Or even in Civilization 5, go edit the source code yourself and actually put in things that are new and different. Not that they ever did that. But.
No, I mean, I couldn't really do much with Civ 5, even though you guys could do loads with Lua.
Does anybody know when they provided access to the DLL in Civ 5?
If anyone would, it would be Lee.
Yeah, it took about 2 years, from what I understand, approximately, from the time the game was first released before the DLL was available for change.
Yeah, because I feel like once that happened is kind of when the modding scene really took off for Civ 5, because then you were able to transcend these problems, basically fixing all of Firaxis's crap for them, and providing all sorts of new capabilities, which was amazing, and I hope that Firaxis will allow us to access the DLL for Civ 6 relatively soon.
Scott's comments do not reflect the publishers or funders of ModCast, and Firaxis still, please give us betas.
I love you, Firaxis.
For the record, we haven't got any betas, so. But our chances just got smaller. For the first time in my career, was called a racist.
For a mod?
Yes. So it's a Civilization 5 mod. We finally released the Salish. Self-promotion. That mod has been like 4 or 5 years on the drawing board and was never released because of art. We weren't a good art studio at the time. We could not build our own models. We couldn't skin our own models. And nobody was interested in making us models at the time. Eventually, we found a model that was close enough and reskinned it ourselves so it looks like garbage. I did that myself. Okay. I used paint. I am proud that the mod came out. I'm not proud of what the texture file looks like. I'm just really lucky that Civilization 5's resolution is garbage, and rendering is garbage in comparison to modern technology. I don't mean that to insult Firaxis. At the time, it was fantastic, but it means that they could get away with what was essentially me copy-pasting color patterns from Google Images and slapping them on a model until it sort of looked like a model, and then hoping no one noticed. And we finally put that up, and ran into immediate problem when T-Pang, who for the record is Australian, so not really from around here where you might actually have contact with some of these culture groups, I'm in Canada, put a what is essentially a Plains Indian war bonnet on a Pacific Northwestern person and caused a riot because he's wearing the wrong hat. And in some ways rightfully so, because that hat is a symbol of leadership, honor. It represents a history of people that wear it, and the people that wear it aren't the Salish people. So it'd be like giving, say, the general's outfit for the U.S. Army to somebody in Canada, or maybe that's not good, strong enough of a phrase. Maybe it would be more like giving, you know, a cardinal's outfit from the Catholic Church, which, you know, means something if you're Catholic, and then giving that robe to some Muslim. It's the same thing, right? I'm pretty sure those groups won't see it that way. It's also particularly bad because there's a lot of misinformation about the history and the person of Seattle, who is the leader for the Salish. In fact, if you Google him, you will find several images that claim to be images of Seattle that have him wearing the same war bonnet that T-Pang dressed him up with, but they're actually not pictures of him at all. But the websites you go to will claim that this is an image of him. So it's not too surprising that T-Pang got messed up. But there's been a negative groundswell against that.
I think that's too bad. It's understandable. You know, you want your culture to be accurately represented in a game.
So here's where I get a little bit upset. It's not that you want your culture well represented, although I can totally understand that if you're a Blackfoot, you might be pissed off at this, and you should be. and apologies, but it's people on the internet that are claiming that someone else will be offended because of something that you've done. To get on my high horse for a moment, you know, I don't think that most of the people that were upset about the War Bonnet had done nearly the amount of research into the Salish people as I have. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they all have PhDs on the subject. But we did a lot of research. We've tried to keep our track record pretty clean, and we've done a good job so far. But all of a sudden, we're being attacked for what is legitimately a mistake. Legitimately a grievous error, but calling somebody a racist because they make one mistake is tough. And as I think everyone in this small echo chamber knows, you're always on shaky ground if you're going to take a culture that is actually alive and well and has cultural elements to them that matter and mean things and they're important to the people that are in them, and you're going to go and put them in a juicer and come up with a couple of agendas and some abilities and put them in a video game about making cities. One of the things that we've been trying to do as an initiative this year has been being more focused on the feedback that we receive through the Systematics forums on previous modcasts, as well as trying to, you know, connect with the listeners more. One thing to talking to a mic for an hour, or in my case, 2 hours. It's another thing to kind of try to get some engagement going. So we had one comment in the last quarter from Grey Tiger on previous modcast. It was sort of a left-handed comment, maybe a little facetious, where he had said, you know, it could be a great resource to modders to have experienced modders. I guess you're an experienced modder now, Scott. comment on modders' work. And to a certain extent, I'm going to be the first one to admit that as we're transitioning from Civ 5 to Civ 6, I don't know that Civ 6 modding is stable yet. We're still in a very volatile state. I think we can make some pretty good guesses that JFD is going to be the most prolific modder so far. But you never know. Someone can come out of nowhere and just produce hundreds of mods and leave us all wondering how they do it. But I think it's fair to say that we tend to focus on Civ 5 old guards that we're familiar with, and it's been a bit of a struggle to bring in new modders from that have just started Civilization 6. There's a lot of noise right now in terms of who's out there, who's actually established, who actually cares about our feedback necessarily, who's doing a good job, who's just learning still. But one of the things that I thought that we could do, specifically this modcast, because I think it's worthwhile, is take a look at a few of Grey Tiger's own mods. He has a half a dozen mods. He's created two civilizations. He's done a Mongolia pack, and he's done a Carthage pack. Both of these are multiple leaders, and their quality is good. We're not looking at cookie cutters and rehashes. What I did kind of want to mention, he's done two things that I really like. One is that he has a little bit of a policy overhaul mod. He's been working on adding additional policies. There's not a lot of them, and I, frankly speaking, I think that in addition to adding more policies, we really need to rework the ones that are already there, but that's a topic for another day. And he's also added, I should say, victories, additional victory types, and some of these victory types are quite good. He has a Reformation Victories mod that adds victories for having a massive city, a population 50 or higher, that are actually happy. I don't even know if that's possible, but there you go. Some of these victories, I think, are much needed, and it's nice to see them. Golden Ages. Now, Lee, I think you've been here in Civilization a lot longer than me. Rob, you certainly have. Scott, I think so as well. I kind of came into the scene. I mean, I played 1 and 2 and so on and so forth, but is it correct that Civilization 6 is the only Civilization game that doesn't have a Golden Age?
No.
No?
No. Golden Ages came in with 3.
Really?
Yeah.
Civ 2 had We Love the King Day in Cities.
That's right. True.
Yeah. Civ 1 and Civ 2, and in fact all of them have had some form of We Love the King Day.
Right.
But 1 and 2 did not have Golden Ages. And Civ 3, you only ever got one Golden Age.
Oh, interesting.
And if you triggered it when conditions were bad, you basically had a wasted Golden Age.
It was, just to clarify, whenever a unique unit defeated something, or if you built a specific wonder that tied in with one of the personality traits that you had, the right. Pyramids was one of them. If you were a builder and you built the pyramids, that would trigger a Golden Age. So to some extent, you could kind of gauge it. But for example, if you're building a wonder, it might take forever to build it. And the Golden Age then comes at a point where actually you can't take the best advantage of it.
So Grey Tiger has added Golden Ages, and they are different. There's a lot of reading to be done to understand how they necessarily work on the mod page, but I'll give a synopsis because I think it's really interesting. What it does is it gives you a portion of your great artist, musician, prophet, and writer points as Golden Age points. And then when you trigger that Golden Age, similar in Civ 5, it's going to reset the Golden Age progress meter, and it's going to be, it's going to start it all over again, but you're also then going to get 10 turns of, the way it is implemented right now, it's 25% additional culture production and science, which at first I thought, I don't know that, you know, I like the production science culture thing. It just basically means you're winning for 25 turns. There's less of an emphasis on gold and culture like there was in Civ 5. Civ 5 wasn't so huge on production and science, but what I think that's great about this is, first of all, you can edit it. He gives you permission to change it. If you don't like the way it works, then change it up a little bit. But what is also great about it is he's added a whole bunch of policies and other elements. There are apparently technologies. If you research certain technologies before everyone else, you'll get points. So it might be a little snowbally. That's the one criticism that I have, is that it seems like getting ahead, you might stay ahead, but that might also describe Civ 6 and maybe Civilization games in a nutshell. If Civilization hasn't historically been so good at saying that if you can't figure out how to get steel, you should be able to defeat the guys that have the tanks, right? It's not really a game about catch-up, and neither is history. But what he does do is add a bunch of new user interface stuff to support this, but also a bunch of policies. And I really like this. He adds a good 10 policies that will do things like allow you to determine what additional benefits you want your Golden Age to do. So if maybe you want your Golden Age to give you more culture, you can choose it. You can maybe increase the speed of your Golden Ages. You can exchange the increase the lengths of your Golden Ages.
Well, my feedback for him is, yeah, I agree that there's a lot of good stuff there. And actually, the artwork that he's done is pretty much okay. One thing that might make it even better, I think, is if he looks for some textures that may be available for his lead ads, because they look fine. There's no real problem with them, but I think with a bit more texture or maybe a different texture, one of the ones that's available out there, I think he might actually get an even better look to the leader heads. So I don't know whether or not he's using Poser or using Daz Studio. It looks like he's using one of the two, but perhaps getting one of the, just having a look around for some more textures might do him some good. You know, I've been using certainly Poser for a lot of years, and my leader heads looked pretty much similar sort of texturally to his at one point, and then I got some more sort of skins, that kind of thing, and that really did help. So hopefully that'll help him.
Right. One of the things that he also does with his two civilization packs, he has the Mongolia with, under Kublai Khan and Ogadai Khan, and Carthage under Dido Hanno and Hasdrubal. Each of his leaders actually has a rule that feeds into his Golden Ages. Now, I think they actually just add additional bonuses that are like, well, if you play as Dido, you'll also get engineer points and artist points towards Golden Age instead of the scientists, writers, and artists. What I'd really like to see, now this is a personal bent, is that, you know, you can specify this is the Golden Age point generation for this particular leader and have that override the default, but like have a default so that if, you know, I'm a big fan of your mod, I can make Golden Age abilities for my leaders. Like, so the danger that I see right now, but I haven't had a chance to look at this myself yet in a game, is does this mean that Grey Tiger's leaders are just more powerful than everyone else's when it comes to Golden Ages? They all have this additional Golden Age flavor? Or will it replace the default in order to just make it more interesting, this, and kind of give you a specific great person focus? What I do really like about this is it also gives us kind of a template for if you wanted to create not your own Golden Age mods, but, you know, if you wanted other kinds of ages, here's a template to go from.
I don't think that that would make that overpowered at all. I just think that's another idea for that particular set, so I don't think it's necessarily overpowered.
Just to clarify as well, the Golden Age benefit is on top of, and I think this is good, because then you don't feel like you're stuck having to use all of his mods if you don't want to, but yeah. It's an additional level on top of the standard unique unit, unique ability, leader ability kind of thing. So it's on top of that. And that's where I think it might feel like, now, I mean, you might just feel like that's just the way the game is, right? Carthage and the Mongols produce Golden Ages faster than everybody else does.
Okay.
Using great generals or whatever.
Yes.
But it does look like it's a solid concept. One of the things that I do think is great is the Great Tiger is plugged in to the Splicers 6 modding community. So I can as well expect great things as he ramps up. You know, his civs are already quite good.
Yeah.
With him being plugged into that community, there's a lot of great artists there that will...
Absolutely. Certainly a lot of artists better than me. I think
they're already talking to him, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Support the ongoing Polycast Patreon campaign.
Collective achievements.
Personal incentives.
Month-to-month commitment.
For more information, visit thepolycast.net/Patreon.
Calling today, in North America the number is 301-637-7659. In Europe, 44121-288-7659.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Modcast, log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
Frankly speaking, in Civilization VI, even if you don't know how to program Lua or script anything, and you just are working with the modifier system, if your mods look cookie cutters, the only person to blame is yourself. You know, I see mods that don't have any Lua scripting in them, that are just using the tools provided by Firaxis, and the degree and the array of different things that you can accomplish is just mind-boggling to a Civilization V modder.
If I could kind of just piggyback off of that, I'm frustrated with the lack of DLL access before, but you know, you are right, because I do consider myself in many ways, and I don't know Lua, and so I wasn't able to actually utilize any of that in Civ 5. And so my mods were fairly limited in what they could do, but in Civ 6, the modifier system has allowed me to do a lot, and I'm very happy with the system that they put in place. You know, it certainly takes some getting used to. It definitely takes diving in to find all the effects and everything, and so it is perhaps a little bit more time-consuming, but for someone who doesn't know Lua, I think basically it just opened up Civ 6 modding to a whole host of new modders who don't have to have a certain level of skill right. with more advanced programming languages, which is a good thing. I think it's a great thing.
Yep, I would agree.
This was Modcast 74. I'm Rob R8XFT. With me today were...
Oh, yes.
Narai the Forgiven.
The Crazy Scotsman.
All right, thanks very much for your time, guys, and thank you, everyone, for listening.
Yeah, we appear to have lost Rob again.
Okay, I'll try not to direct questions directly at Rob and let him volunteer when he can. The good thing, by the way, Scott, is that Dan will edit this a lot, so...
Okay, yeah, he cleans up our mess quite a bit.
He removes about 75% of the things I say, and all of the cat noises that come from Rob. I think Rob has cats, and it actually makes us listenable.
I just had a question in my head and it just went poof.
That's important.
But I've tried disabling something else and see if that does it. But you know what it's like, it might be off in a few seconds. So.
Well, keep speaking up when you have questions and we'll see if they come through. I actually don't expect a response.
but certainly...
Crap.
Yeah. Oh, I don't have any idea what Rob was about to say because he keeps cutting out.
He did, or I don't even know if it's actually... Well, let's see. Here's the problem. I'm going to get hate mail. Hate mail incoming. Somebody could come up with the most amazing mechanic. Rob, your mic is doing the robots taking over the world thing. What I actually think is happening, Rob, is that you've got a device running on your computer that detects question marks, and as soon as somebody asks you a question, you're dead.
That makes perfect sense.
Are you still there?
No, he's gone again.
So, let me try to get back on topic. Lee, ask questions.
What was the topic? I had to,
We're talking about, Rob, you there?
Yes, temporarily.
All right, you got a question?
No.
Okay. By the way, welcome to the show, Rob.
Yes, I seem to be on for a record amount of time at the moment, don't I?
Yeah. Almost at least 30 seconds.
Well, it...
Okay. Okay, Dan, that one has to stay. That one has to stay in the outtakes for sure. The release of the Firaxis, Kamai, and Indonesia DLC,
yeah.
Along with the breaking of all mods and city start position for stakes.
Yeah, that was a bit of a problem, wasn't it?
Just a little.
And I've also run some malware on this, and so far, I'm back.
It's malware, hey?
Get like a malware deleter. So I ran that, and so far, so good.
This is, I believe, a new record.
I think it is.
Our hopes will be crushed in a couple more seconds.
Ask me a question if it deletes it.
Yeah, that's right. Somebody make a question mark.
But I don't think that it was necessarily, with going back to Grey Tiger's situation, obviously Dan is going to do a lot of editing here. But, recording 21st of October 2017. Civilization 4 and 5 sound clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.